Hey, hey, I'm Casual Jake.
And I'm Connor, aka Taito.
And welcome to the MTG Educators Network podcast. We are so excited to bring you episode 2 today. Today, Connor and I will be discussing the MTG formats we play and how playing multiple formats has its benefits.
Yeah, I definitely think that Magic, one of its strengths is that there are so many fun formats, and literally no matter what you want, you can find something. If you want to be competitive, you can go play Modern, Legacy, Standard. If you want to have fun on a budget, you can play Pauper. If you want to just have a fun night with your friends, you can play Commander.
For sure. And I think just like as a middle school teacher, of course, that's where my brain goes to, like, the different subjects. You know, even though some of these might not be your favorite, like when you try out new subjects, when you try out new things, they bring you new skills. So I found that, like, when I'm playing one format, I start to think a certain way and it makes me a better player in certain other formats. And I think we're going to get into some of that here in just a bit. So would you like to get us started on our first format today?
Yeah. So our first format that we're going to talk about is, I believe, both my favorite and your favorite.
Yes.
We have Commander, right? This is the one EDH. That got me back into Magic. Yeah, for sure. It got me back into Magic. It's such a different format and a different way to play. And, you know, as they say, it's the way that Garfield intended us to play. So
yeah, exactly.
I love talking about Commander.
Oh, yeah. We're definitely going to talk about it. And just for those of y'all who aren't as familiar with Commander, which is sometimes quoted as saying the best format, you can debate that in the comments. But let's talk about what Commander is. So Commander is a multiplayer format, going to be generally 4 players. I've seen 5 pods. I've seen 3 pods. Not my favorite, but generally it's meant to be played with 4 players. Each deck is going to have 1 commander. That's going to be a legendary creature that, or a planeswalker, I guess. It just has to say that it could be your commander, but you choose a legendary. And the color identity of that creature is going to determine the colors that you can use in your deck. You're going to have 99 cards in your deck, and they're going to be singleton. So aside from basic lands, every copy of the card, you only get one. You start off at 40 life, and there's this fancy thing called commander damage, where if a commander deals 21 points of damage to an opponent, they actually lose the game. So it's kind of a quick route to victory if you want to go that way.
Yeah, I know a lot of people still say that commander damage is an outdated rule and it almost never matters anymore. But we've seen some pretty strong commanders come out recently with some really good life gain, which sure. is what commander damage actually exists to prevent.
Wait until you're staring down someone who infinitely gains life, and then there's only one way to take them down at that point. And yeah, it may be, I have rarely seen commander damage been used, but when it's useful, it's useful.
Yeah, there's definitely some archetypes that use it more than others. Voltron, which is an archetype where you try to get one or two creatures and suit them up with a bunch of artifacts or auras in order to deal the most damage as possible. So you'll get someone like Balan the Wandering Knight, which is a white commander, and he gets better the more artifacts you slap on him. So he is going to look to try to do 21 commander damage to you to get you out of the game quick.
For sure, for sure. Why don't you tell us why you love EDH, Connor?
EDH is, it's everything I wanted from Magic for so long. One of the things that I would notice when I would go to tournaments is that some players would just care more about, like, winning and getting the game over as fast as possible. So EDH offers everything that I would want besides just the fact that I'm playing a game. So it offers that social interaction. You know, you can hang out with some of your friends, play the game, maybe enjoy some snacks, some drinks, just hang out and have a good time while playing a really fun game. And that's that poker night feel that a lot of people look for and they get with EDH, Commander, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I'd just like to add that, you know, I haven't really gotten with my friends to have a casual night of, you know, Standard or anything like that. So Commander, like you said, definitely brings people together. It's, you know, generally considered to be a casual format, even though there are circles that do play competitive EDH. But it's all about talking to your table, talking to your friends, and deciding what's going to be the most fun tonight.
Yeah, and to that end, what's the most fun is you get to play your favorite cards. There are so many cards that I love that you really couldn't play in any other format. Some examples that pop to mind are Karametra's Acolyte, which is a 4-drop that taps for green mana equal to your devotion to green. It costs 4. It's not really good enough to see play in Standard or Modern or anywhere else. And Hydra Broodmaster is another one of my favorites, where it has a monstrosity cost of XX, and you create XXX Hydras. which I absolutely loved. And I did try to play it in Standard. Did not go great. But those cards have a home in EDH. Everyone can... It's 100 cards. You can find a spot for your favorite cards in decks. Even if they're not the best, it's not going to hurt your chances of winning anymore. So those are the reasons why I love EDH. You got anything else to add on there, Jake?
Like you said, you can just play the cards that you like. One of my gimmicks, if you will, is I like to build around mechanics, especially mechanics that are undersupported, if you would. So I just built a deck recently that's built off the Explore mechanic for Ixalan. So that says when the creature enters the battlefield, you reveal the top card. If it's a land, you put it into your hand. If it's a non-land, you can either keep it there or put it into the graveyard, and then you put a counter on that creature. So it is a counter deck. But it's using Explore, which just, there's not a lot of cards. I mean, there's only two sets, Ixalan and Rivals, that use it. And it's pretty underwhelming, but it's really fun to try to make happen. I make all those cards happen. And then, of course, I use good spells like, what's the one? Hardened Scales to give it extra ones and stuff like that. But it's just kind of goofy. And I get to play, Ixalan was the set that I started with. So I get to see a bunch of those cards that I first opened when I first started cracking packs and put them into a deck. And even though it's not the most powerful, it's just a lot of fun. And then, of course, I talk to my group and say, hey, I want to play this kind of janky deck. Are y'all cool with that? And they're like, yeah, we'll jank it up. And we all decide that we're going to do that. And then later on in the night, we're like, okay, let's get down to business. And we bring out those absolute battle cruiser decks to go. So but that's just, again, one of the reasons why I love it.
Yeah, for sure. I think that I love underrepresented mechanics as well. One of the things that I thought was absolutely criminal was how weak the party mechanic was in Zendikar Rising. I also don't like that it didn't include some of the other most iconic races, classes, I should say, from D&D. I'm a huge D&D fan, so I'm really excited for Forgotten Realms when that comes next year.
Sure, yeah. That's like your set right there, man.
Oh, so much. I'm really excited for next year altogether. We have Strixhaven, which is essentially the Hogwarts set, and then we also have the Forgotten Realms set. So I just built my Tazri deck, so very similar kind of idea there.
Great. Well, I think another thing that we can agree on is the memories that you make while playing EDH. Like you said, when you're playing Commander, you're playing big spells usually. You know, you're doing fun stuff. There's a lot of flavor going on. You're with people. So what are some of your favorite memories from your EDH experiences?
So I can think of two specifically that come off the bat. Both of them involve a big spell resolving. So my favorite deck is Kethys, the Hidden Hand, which is an Abzan deck. So it is green, black, white, which is, this is a little bit of a tease for our next episode. We'll be going in in-depth deck tech with Kethys, the
Spoilers.
Hidden Hand. And one of my favorite spells in that deck is a spell called Primeval's Glorious Rebirth. And this came out in Dominaria.
It's a cool card.
It's so cool. It costs 5, a white and a black, so 7 mana total, and it's a legendary sorcery. So Kethys, if you don't know, is all about casting legendary spells, whether it's from your hand or from the graveyard. And what it says is fairly simple: return all legendary permanent cards from your graveyard to the battlefield. So I've had some pretty big blowouts with this. I've returned, Bruna and Gisela to make a Brizella. I've returned an Avacyn and an Elishnorn and a Shieldred all in the same turn. Wow. I've returned multiple gods. Yeah. 2 different Nylias, 2 different Erebuses, a Bantu, a Ronus, some crazy amounts of stuff in that deck. So anytime I get to play that spell and it really feels like it was good, it's a win for me. And also, I have this story of once when I was teaching my girlfriend how to play EDH, actually, and she was playing my Uro deck. And there was this moment where I had basically game on board, and I said, the only thing you could do is if you kept doing that loop that I showed you and you find a certain card. And she's like, okay, so I do this and this and this. And she's kind of understood the loop of drawing the cards. She's using all of her mana to try to draw the cards. Like, I think she had a Nyx Blue Mage announced. She had triple mana. Crazy amounts of mana. Oh, yeah. So she finally, it was the last card. It was the last one that she could have drawn that would still leave her with enough mana to cast that big card, which is probably arguably the best card in Commander still, Cyclonic Rift. And she got it on the last one, and she won the game, and she was so happy, which made me happy at the end of the day. I love her so much. So to share that memory with her is really, really cool. But I'm not the only one here. So what about some of your favorite memories?
Sure. So, I mean, speaking about sharing your love of the game with a significant other, me and my girlfriend both play And it's funny because when we started playing with the little battle decks that you get for free. And they were like, okay. She fell in love with the game when we said Commander. Her first deck was an Ayula Bear Tribal deck, and she just freaking loved it. I think she just loved that she get to cast a bunch of cute little bears that like rip your face off. And it was actually quite powerful. It won a lot of games when she first started playing. But one of my personal favorite memories was playing with her and my other best friend. We were actually at a bar. One of our local bars hosted an EDH night. So you could go there and you could order drinks like Nissa's Pilgrimage and the Sun Titan. And they had these thematic, you know, beverages for you to have. So we're sitting there. You know, we got like our hot wings over there and a lot of napkins so we don't get the cards messed up.
Of course.
And I'm playing my Verena Lich Queen EDH deck. And I resolve a Bolas of Citadel, which if you don't know, it allows you to cast spells off the top. But you have to pay life instead of casting, instead of paying their mana cost. So I have a Corpse Knight out. So I'm like, okay, if I can just get a bunch of stuff onto the battlefield, I can hopefully kill my opponents before I die, right? Because it's going to cost me life. And so I'm going and going and going. And the hard part is when you hit land, because you can play the first land, but if you hit a second land, you can't play it off the top because you've already played a land. And so that happens eventually. I'm getting really far. I'm getting my opponents super low. And I get that second land. I'm like, oh no. Like, I'm going to lose the game because clearly I can win next turn if they let me do this again. So they're going to target me. And then I saw some weird interaction on the board. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I figured out a way to draw that land and continue going. And eventually I got down to one life and my opponents were like at 9 and 8. And the last part of Bolas of Citadel is you tap it, sacrifice 10 non-land permanents and they lose 10 life. And sure enough, I tapped all the zombies that I brought off, won the game. And it was like, oh my gosh, Jake, you won with one life. And you know, that, you know, one life's all it takes, man. You don't have to, as long as you're not at zero, you're good to go. So that was just a cool memory. And what I liked about that was it was fun for the whole table. Maybe it was because we were all having beverages and whatnot, but I find when players take a long time with turn, sometimes it can be a little tedious and like, okay, they're just doing their thing.
For sure.
But I think the whole table was kind of like, oh my gosh, can he do it? Almost rooting for me to do it. And seeing the wheels spin in my head, it just got them real excited. So when I played that last one, it was like, boom, crack the Citadel, good game. They were like, oh my God, he did it. You know, we're all freaking out and everything. So that was one of my favorite memories. Again, not only the interaction, the big spells, but just the friendship and the reactions I got from them.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I think you ask any EDH player, possibly even CEDH players, which is competitive EDH, right, most of them are going to say that the fact that they can play this game with their friends, hang out and have a good time, it's probably at the top of their list as to why they love the format. But at the end of the day, the format is still a way to play the game and the game requires cards. And so what we're talking about is the benefit of playing all these different formats. So
of course,
when we're playing Commander, we have to look at these cards and decide whether or not they're good enough for the format.
Right. I think a big consideration is you need to think about in other formats, generally you're playing against one other person, you know, mano-y-mano kind of situation, where in this, you have three other players. So certain spells that maybe do one thing, maybe it just doesn't scale for Commander. You know, maybe it's just not good enough for Commander. So when you're evaluating cards, what are some of the things that you're thinking about, Connor?
Yeah. So I think similar to a format like Limited, cards value is weighed so differently in Commander. There's different aspects of the format at the fundamental level. There's multiple players, which means there's multiple turns. There's more life. So you have more life to both use as a resource or, to protect another player from you killing them, right?
Sure.
There's all of these different fundamental, differences, as well as the fact that you have a commander that's going to limit your colors, but also drive the strategy of your deck. So
right,
you need to look at things like this. So if it says, you know, on each of your turns, you get to play an effect, that's going to possibly be worse than once a turn.
Right.
Because if you get a once a turn card, you can untap all of your resources and find ways to play spells on your opponent's turns. I think a really good example of this is recently Cadena, the Slinking Sorcerer, I think is the name of the card. The Morph Commander, the Sultai Morph Commander that came out. She said, the first morph creature you play each turn is free, or had something along those lines.
Right, right, right. Not so, your turn, each turn.
Right. So everyone's first thought was, okay, well, I need to put in Leyline of Anticipation, which lets me play it instant speed. Teferi, Mage of Zalfir, which lets me play it instant speed. Vidalcan Orrery, our friends at the Command Zone's favorite card, right? We mm-hmm. need to get all of those cards into this deck so that that way I can play on everyone else's turn to get that card draw, right?
For sure. So like you said, like you said, cards like Seedborn Muse as well, untapping every turn, like that's just insane because when you think about it, you're going from something 25% of the time of the commander game, which is on your turn, to now 100% of the time, every turn you're taking advantage, you're using your resources to further your game.
Yeah, and that little engine that we just talked about where you're going to have those, you know, three or four cards that help you play things at instant speed, creatures at instant speed, then Seedborn Muse, probably a Wilderness Reclamation. That's now six cards, which if you don't count your lands, that's about a tenth of your deck. So mm-hmm. that really it drives the way that you're going to be building your deck when you look at things like this. Another thing that I try to avoid specifically recently as I've been getting better is the do nothing cards. Mm-hmm. So these are cards like, you know, Mana Reflections on turn five. You
right.
spend your entire turn to double your mana next turn, but you've also just put down a big scary target on the board that did nothing for you this turn, and now you're tapped out.
Right, exactly. You have to be really conscious because, again, when you pass the turn, you're not passing to, you know, one turn, you're passing three turns going. I think that's kind of why I think it's generally accepted that Planeswalkers are a little bit weaker in Commander because not only do you have one opponent, you know, across from you swinging, but you also have the opponent diagonally and next to you. You know, you have three rotations where that could be affected, where your board can be affected, where you can be affected.
Yeah, and I challenge anyone who thinks that the difference between, you know, two turns and four turns isn't that much to play a four-player game of Commander with a deck maybe like Xenagos, which is a really bursty Commander where they'll just slap something down and then hit someone for 35.
Mm-hmm.
Play against that in a four-player game and then play against it in a 30-person game.
Oh, yeah.
That one extra person possibly having an answer makes that deck so much worse. It's still a good deck, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one less person that can remove Xenagos, that can counter Xenagos, that can, you know, remove the threat that he puts down that turn. So that's, you can see it, you can feel it when you're playing between three and four players. So two and four players is going to be a whole other world of difference.
Of course. And speaking of that, I'm going to go off script a little bit here because we actually forgot the political implications of Commander. You know, we talk about the uniqueness of this format. Unlike any other 1v1 format, you can make deals. Like, you know, when's the last time you went to a standard tournament and said, hey, look, if you don't swing at me, I'll do something next turn. Like, no, there's just nothing like that. Being in Commander, cards that allow you to leverage that, I find, are really good. Even just simple removal spells saying, hey, look, I have removal. I can take the big scary Xenagos over there somehow. I can exile that enchantment, but I need something from you. Maybe you don't attack me, or maybe you do this for me. And so having cards that can allow you to kind of leverage them to give you political favors in the future could be something to consider as well.
Yeah, and Wizards has actually done a really good job at giving us even more options to do this with different mechanics, such as, you know, Monarchy, Council's Will, Council's Dilemma, right?
Oh, these, the one where you choose friend or foe from, I forget what that is, but yeah, you choose friend or foe. I don't know if it's not assist, because that's a team one. I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, it's from Battle Bond. It's called either. Yeah.
It's where you choose whether your person's a friend or a foe, and depending on what you choose for them, they get some sort of effect.
Right.
So, I think that one's cool because you can say like, okay, Connor, we've been cool. You're my friend. It's kind of me and you versus those two. So let's make them foes, you know, and you can kind of play around with that.
Yeah, exactly. These sets that are designed for multiplayer have really given us these cool multiplayer mechanics like Council's Will, Council's Dilemma, the Monarch, all of this. So that's from like Conspiracy 2, Battle Bond was really good for that. So. For sure. I mean, a perfect example is the Battle Bond lands. This enters the battlefield untapped if you have two or more opponents. A card's garbage anywhere else. You can play it in Legacy and Vintage, but it's a guild gate, but it's not even a gate. So those cards, granted, that's at a very simplistic level, but those cards are really good in Commander.
I was going to say, you're right. And before we can make this whole episode about Commander, I think I just want to say, speaking of stuff that's coming up, Commander Legends is coming up. It's going to be a set all about Commander in the year of Commander. So if you want to hear us maybe talk about some of those cards, maybe do a set review, let us know in the comments. You know, let us know what's going on the social medias, and maybe we can make that happen, because it sounds like me and Connor are definitely about the EDH.
Please give me a reason to talk about EDH more.
There you go. We'll see you in the comments, y'all. I think we should move on to our next format, which is a format that you seem to be a part of and a format that intimidates the heck out of me. It is the modern format. So why don't you tell us just a little bit about what modern is?
So modern is the step between standard and legacy. Modern is a format that was designed to be kind of this stopgap when legacy was becoming too expensive and too difficult to enter, so they created modern. And it's a 60-card format. It is played in 1v1, so we're now moving into our part of the discussion where we're looking at non-multiplayer cards.
Sure.
So it's 60 cards. You do have a 15-card sideboard. It's usually played in a best-of-three set, and there's a cutoff for when cards are legal. So it's called modern because it's, you know, cards that were printed in the modern frame. So this is before... Or sorry, this is anything after, I believe, 7th edition. So it does go a far ways back at this point, and we are getting to the point where even modern was starting to have too high of a barrier of entry, so they created formats like historic and pioneer.
Pioneer. Which I liked pioneer. Pioneer, we're not going to talk about too much today, but that was me like, I want to try an older format, but I can't afford shock lands, you know, or sorry, fetch lands right now, or sets of them, so... but speaking of like, you know, fetches and some of this stuff that just speeds the game up, by my understanding, moderns can be a pretty fast format.
Yeah. So Wizards has this rule in it's having to do with infinite combos actually, or combos in general, as to decide what is too fast or not too fast for the format. And it goes by the number of turns that the deck can consistently win on. So in standard, if a combo deck can ever win consistently more faster than turn five, I believe, then they start to look at that combo and try to disrupt a piece of it by using a banning. Modern then goes down to turn four, and legacy goes down to turn three.
Gotcha.
Modern also has this interesting meta where there are good cards that, you know, can cost exorbitant amounts of mana. But because of the way that the meta has shaped up, you are not playing cards unless you're playing control or one of the ramp decks. Or a reanimator deck, but those aren't really in existence anymore because of Faithless Looting's ban.
Right.
You do not play cards that cost more than four, probably. Four is probably the highest CMC that you play in this format.
Right. So very low to the ground, you would say.
Yeah.
Which is, because that's just quite a contrast from EDH. You know, we were just talking about, oh yeah, play your nine mana spells. And now you're saying, wait, I shouldn't go above four.
Yeah, exactly. You know, one of the key ways that you can see this kind of manifest itself is one of the strongest spells in modern is a card called Fatal Push.
Mm.
And Fatal Push is one black mana, and it lets you destroy a creature with converted mana cost two or less. And that's pretty good. But it also has Revolt. So if a permanent left your battlefield this turn, it is four or less. And that will kill almost anything that you care about in the format besides Primetime.
There you go. Wow. Yeah. I mean, that sounds interesting. And so, yeah, you're talking about these cards that when you're evaluating them, they don't seem super powerful. Because to me, especially my commander oriented, you know, soft brain, I'm thinking that's not very good. But it seems like it's powerful in the right circumstance. So when you're evaluating, what do you think about when you're looking at modern cards?
So for modern, first things first, you have to look at your meta. And that's super important. And that's something that you can learn with a format like Commander, as well as what people are playing.
Sure.
If creatures are more prevalent, then you need more removal, and maybe your decks that run your Fatal Pushes and your Lightning Bolts are going to be in the format. If it's a slower format, your decks like Jund and Blue-White Control are going to be in the format. But the cards that you need to really evaluate are the ones that are going to cover the most amount of circumstances. So you have this idea of a sideboard in which you can side cards in after game one. And those cards need to be able to cover, you know, your weakest matchups. So I play a lot of creature decks. So the cards that I run are the ones that will remove the creatures that are bigger than mine. The cards that I play are my more utility things, or things that shut down graveyard strategies or artifact strategies.
Sure.
So you really need to be able to cover as many bases as possible because, you know, similar to Commander, because it's the format we already talked about, your answers are slotted into your 100-card deck. In modern, your answers usually that do not have to do necessarily with your strategy are in your 15-card sideboard.
Right. So it's kind of like you have that utility belt like Batman, and you can reach for the other tool, and using the right tool could really sway the tide of the game going into games two and three.
Oh yeah, it is not uncommon. I went to a tournament once, and this situation is not uncommon. I was playing Bant Spirits, so green, blue, white spirits with Collected Company, which is my favorite card of all time.
Coco.
Unfortunately, not good in my favorite format. But I was playing, and game two against a Storm player, I slammed down a Damping Sphere, and he looked at me, he looked at his hand, and he shuffled up for game three.
There you go.
Yeah. And that's not uncommon. If you slam down a Grafdigger's Cage or a Gaddock Teague against some decks, they just can't handle it. Like a Plague Engineer is one that absolutely ruins my day when I'm playing elves.
Right, right.
So it's about answering these scenarios that you can with that 15 card sideboard.
Sure. So like you said, knowing the meta, knowing what you could possibly face against, and then having the tools to combat that. That's super interesting. You make me want to try Modern sometime. Maybe I'll proxy up a deck and we can get some games in sometime.
Yeah, that's the moral of the story is proxy up a deck, because it took me a year and a half to build Spirits when I was a college student. It took me a year to build Humans when I was not a college student. Elves is a cheaper deck, and it's still, you know, the lands that you play between Cavern of Souls and Guiltleaf Palace can run you about $500 just for that eight cards. So it's an expensive format, unfortunately. But it can be a very fun format. My issue is I soul search for a deck very often in that format, and I cannot find one that I really love besides Elves, and it's not one of the best decks in the format.
Gotcha. Well, hey, I'm just saying, there's people who take Elves, you know. It's kind of like the professor, like he's just waiting for Merfolk's time to show. And you know what? When there's a viable Merfolk deck in Modern, I guess that's when I'll get into it, because I love me some fish folk.
Yeah, funnily enough that you mentioned Merfolk, you did mention that you started off when Ixalan came around, which was, you know, the return of Merfolk into our standard sphere. Yep. But it was also the return of Merfolk into the limited sphere. Do you like that? That was a good segue.
Yeah,
what
a segue, man. looking like a champ. Yeah, limited. Again, another fun format and just a different way to approach the game.
Yeah, it just like Commander fundamentally changes the rules of the game. Limited, specifically draft, because there is also sealed limited, which we're not going to spend any time talking about today.
Yeah.
Draft is very, very different. And I'm not exactly, just like you are not super familiar with Modern, I'm not super familiar with draft. So please enlighten me.
Sure. So when I first got into Magic, draft seemed so cool to me because it was kind of a mixture of luck and skill. So the way that the draft usually works is you're going to get together usually with about six or eight people at a table, depending on where your LGS is going, and everyone's going to get three packs. You're going to get just three packs of whatever set you're drafting. Usually it's a standard set, but I've seen people draft older sets as well. But everyone gets three packs, and you crack open that first pack, and just like, I guess, like kind of like the NFL draft, you just pick a card. You pick a card that you like, and then you put it on, and you put it down, and then you pass the pack to the left, and then they pass you another pack. And you look at that and you pick a card and you just keep going, going, going. And you do that for a while, get a little stack of cards. And then the next pack, you take it, you crack it, pick one, go to the right. And so you kind of draft this collection of cards and then you build a deck around it. Now, the deck isn't 60 cards like other formats constructed. It's 40 cards. So you kind of and that's due to just the amount of cards that are in the packs. You know, you're only opening three packs. It's a little hard to get that, but also it helps you kind of sharpen down to an archetype. So one thing that I enjoy about drafting is it kind of shows you what is new in the set. You know, you're going to see the new mechanics, you're going to see the new creatures, the new spells, all that stuff. And what's cool is if you have something that you know is supported in the set, let's say it's a mechanic like Party, you can kind of pick cards in other packs that are going to support that theme. The difficulty with that being is, do you want to commit to something super early and then maybe you don't get supported in it in your other packs? Or do you want to, you know, so it's discovering when the right time to kind of commit to a strategy and a color combination is a big limited kind of conundrum, but it's part of what makes it so fun to me. So when I'm drafting, I was told, and I read this article and saw this video, and they would say, don't forget bread. And if you've never heard of bread, it's going to save your life. Like I have a notepad on my life pad and I write B-R-E-A-D vertically because I mark which cards I get of these. So bread stands for bombs, removal, evasion, aggro, and duds. And it kind of goes from importance from B all the way down. So of course, bombs, those, that's what you want. You know, you want a few just cards that are going to help you win the game. That could be a big creature that's going to finish it off, or that big spell that's going to mill out your opponents and let you win. Right. It's kind of like your win con. Your removal comes second. So you don't want to just be sitting there playing solitaire. You want to react to what's going on the other side of the table. So you're looking for cards that are going to take care of the other opponent's threats, their threats. You're going to look for some evasion. So these are things that are going to get past your opponents. So things like flying, things that are unblockable. Flying is super, super good in limited, so because if you have someone who just doesn't have a way to deal with flyers, then you just keep swinging and win the game. You know, you're only at 20 life, you know, so you can get it down pretty easy. Aggro is another thing to think about. This is kind of towards the bottom. Generally, limited decks aren't super aggressive, but there are archetypes that work with that. I've been drafting a lot of Zendikar Rising right now, and Warrior aggro goes hard. I love slapping down some Boros aggro. Yeah, I can win, you know, turn four with some really good draft. Now, you know, that doesn't always happen, but you get the right hand, the right card, you can go pretty dang fast with that. And then, of course, you have the duds. These are cards that you're not really going to worth, that they're just not worth playing, you know, and you're going to get some of those. So I think my first pitfall when I got into limited and drafting was I would pick these cards that I didn't really want. And I would think, okay, how do I make this work? Well, you don't, because you're not going to play every card that you draft. You're going to formulate it down. You have about 16 to 17 lands, depending on your curve. Mm-hmm. And the rest are going to be spells. So you're going to have some cards that are extra. On Arena, actually, a little pro tip. Once you start getting to the duds, I just pick color combinations that I'm not going to use. So if I've committed to red, white, I'll pick a green card just so I can easily take it out. And I can just say, look, I'm not going to use anything for this pack. That way I can just do that. But my other favorite thing about the limited format, aside from getting all these new cards, getting to see them, is one, you get to keep the cards. So when you go, you pay for the packs and you pay for the experience. And you get to keep whatever cards you open. So that's kind of cool. Cool way to kind of jumpstart your collection. As a commander player, I usually only want one of every card anyway. So, you know, if I pull that awesome rare in my first pack, oh, well, great. I can use it in commander now. But it also helps me reevaluate what cards are good and why they're good. This is kind of a common theme we've come into with all these formats, is each one changes the way that a card is good. Because there could be a card, like you said, is great commander, bad in modern. You know, same thing here in draft. And I think in draft, some of the things that are underrated, or, well, they're probably rated to the people who know, but when you're first starting off, they might not seem like a good thing. Evasion, flying, getting able to get damage through, even when, you know, you're not doing much else, is a good thing. I think another big thing for limited is mana sinks. So ways to use your mana. As the game goes on, there's been a lot of times where I'm playing and I have, like, somehow I've drawn 10 of my lands. They're all on the battlefield and I just draw another one and I have nothing in my hand, no gas. And I'm just looking at my opponent like, okay, go, I guess. And I don't have anything to do. But when you have a mana sink, you're always using that resources. You don't want to leave resources up unless you're, like, trying to play tempo counter spells. But you want to use the resources. And if you can find a good mana sink that'll, you know, gain you life or pump your creatures or something like that, that's always good. And then the last thing that I would say to that is you probably can't play too much removal when it comes to this. There's definitely playing under removal. If you're not interacting with your opponent when they slam down their bomb, GG, shuffle up. You know, if you have no way in your deck to deal with it, the idea is that you can deal with their threat while maintaining and protecting your threats. So making sure that you have good threats in there. The last thing I just want to touch on as far as draft is it is, in my opinion, a social format because you are sitting at a table generally with people. Now, Arena has changed this a little bit, you know, kind of. But I am glad that they added the person draft, you know, because now it feels a little bit more warm, a little bit more authentic. You know, I'm picking packs that I know other people are picking from, and it's not just the bot auto picks the highest rarity. So I would say that a lot of times when I go to draft, I talk to the people next to me before we start drafting. You know, you kind of have the packs in front of you. Like, hey, what are you looking at trying to get? You know, what are you excited about the set? You know, blah, blah, blah. And then I always, this moment is so funny when someone like opens their first pack and they're like, oh, yeah. And you can just tell that they opened like a bomb rare and you kind of roll your eyes, but you're also happy for them. You know, the other expression that I hear a lot is, you know, someone, you pass some packs around and someone will be like, oh my gosh, how is this card still in there? And you know, you're like, I mean, it just didn't go with my strategy. So it's definitely a fun format. It's pretty accessible, I'd say, because even if you are a beginner, just pick cards that look good and you'll mm-hmm. probably do okay. And then as you practice, as you refine it, you're going to start valuing cards differently and you're going to become a better draft player. You're going to, you know, what I like is you're going to leave with something, you know, yes. even if you lose every match, you're going to keep the cards that you opened up. And if you do well, usually there's LGS prize support. Of course, we're in COVID right now. Don't be touching people's cards, you know, sanitize, whatnot. But I think that drafting in Arena is a great way to get started.
Yeah, I've definitely heard that, you know, besides Commander, maybe even more so than Commander sometimes, draft is the most social format or the second most social format. And it's also sure. a really good way to start to build a collection. Because you just, you, like you said, you draft, you get to keep the cards. Entry is usually just the cost of your packs, which is what, 4 packs at $4 a piece. It's like $16. Like that's not yeah. too bad. It's not bad at all. So, I usually pay, you know, $5 to $10 to play Modern or Standard at a tournament event. So
right. I definitely think paid $1,000 for your deck.
Yeah. Don't even get me started. So it's definitely a really cool way for people to get into the game. And I do know that it's a lot of people's first look at the game. And honestly, it's how the game was, it is designed and released as boosters are their draft boosters.
Right. Yeah, so we've only seen the introduction of like the collector's boosters and now the, what are they called?
The set boosters.
The set boosters, right. Those are just meant to crack yeah. and open and have fun with. Yeah, they do, you know, the whole rarity system and having one rare and, you know, including that stuff, the way packs are built. Generally, they are meant to be drafted so that there's a good mix of cards to be used in a draft environment that LGS can crack open a box, you know, slide 3 packs to everyone and people are going to enjoy what they get.
Yeah, exactly. And I also think that the fact that these boosters exist and the draft has been a format that Magic has had for so long, it's also opened up the opportunity for other, if you want to call them limited formats, can exist. So we saw recently the printing of Jumpstart, which I think was honestly one of the coolest things that Wizards has done in a really long time.
Do it again. Jumpstart 2, please.
Well, no, print the first one again because Allosaurus... Allosaurus Rider or Allosaurus Shepherd, whatever it is like $90 and it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's I mean, crazy.
My brother who I should say warmly makes fun of me for being a nerd, played Jumpstart and loved it. He's like, how do I have minotaurs that read books and I beat my brother who I know is good at this game? I'm like, that's just Jumpstart, man. You know, crack 2 packs, put them together and try it out. And it's just a lot of fun. You're right. Wizards, keep doing fun stuff like that. It's good.
Yes. And I think we've now talked about, you know, the marquee formats, probably the most popular formats, but we haven't talked about is the format that is always, you know, changing and probably the format that Wizards would like to push the most, which is Standard.
Yeah, I would call it the flagship of Wizards. Yeah. You know, as much as they support other formats or don't in some cases, Standard is kind of their baby because it is going to be the most recent sets.
Yeah, sorry. And because it's the most recent sets, it's a very fast evolving format. The we've seen bans recently, which also helped to evolve the format so much. But for the most part, Standard changes every few months because new cards will get released, and then every other few months we'll also have cards that will rotate out. So this idea of rotation, which is one of the reasons that a lot of people actually will not get into the format, is that
right.
I got this sweet bomb, right? I got this, I'm trying to think of a reason why, even 4-Color Omnath, right? 4-Color Omnath.
Right, banned, right.
But I got this sweet bomb and in a year or so, I'm not going to be able to play it anymore. I built this really cool deck and in, you know, 6 to 9 months, I won't be able to play it anymore. So that's a real big reason as to why a lot of people are scared of the format is the rotation. But I do think that there is an advantage to the fact that it is a fast evolving format with all these new sets that get released. And just like Limited, it's a way to showcase these new mechanics.
Right. No, I was going to say part of why I do enjoy Standard, because believe me, I don't like buying cards and then watching them kind of sit in my binder afterward.
Right.
You know, maybe they do find a home in Modern. Maybe they find a home in Pioneer. Maybe they find in my Commander decks. But sometimes the cards, and we'll get to evaluating cards, are only good in Standard environment. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very good in this specific case. But that's also one thing that I like is that I know that from a year from now, Standard is going to look different than it did today. There's going to be new archetypes that open up. You know, I think a really popular thing that opened up right now is Rogues with Zendikar Rising. And mm-hmm. people are like, it's a meme. And then it like showed up in all these top finishes. And
no, it's good.
Like, oh, it's good. And now it's kind of going back and forth. And who knows where it's going to go? You know, maybe it gets more support. Maybe it's, you know, no longer gets support and then it kind of fades away, but you kind of have these ebb and flows. I would say that Standard is probably one of the most volatile formats because it's always getting new cards with every new set. And so I think one of the struggles right now is Wizards trying to balance it. You know, we saw, like you said, the four-color Omnath being banned pretty soon after being released, where four-color Omnath might be fine in Commander and maybe other formats. It's just, for like you said, for a Standard, if you can consistently do these crazy combos, crazy stuff, like by turn five, Wizards is looking at it and saying, we need to change something. And even though I don't know if there's any infinite combos with Omnath, it definitely got a lot of GGs by turn four or five because of just how fast it was.
Yeah, and I think you touched upon the one thing that keeps me coming back to Standard, which is those new mechanics and themes in each set. You also said this for Limited, it's a great way to see the set. And I think the same thing can be said of Standard sometimes. So I do think that Zendikar Rising has given us that. We've seen party decks, we've seen rogue decks, we've seen, you know, warriors and everything like that, which I think are really cool. But then at the same time, there are some times where you'll just have, yeah, there's a mono red aggro deck and there's a, you know, blue white X control deck, and that's kind of the format.
Also,
right now.
You better not talk about my mono red deck like that. I took mono red to a top four at a player qualifier thing. So like by accident, by the way, but that's another story for another time.
Well, yeah, that's because you got to play four games in the time it takes me to play one, because you know whether you're going to win or lose by turn three.
Yeah, but like you said, you know, cards are so different. So we talk about evaluating cards. As someone who streams a lot of Arena, you know, Standard is kind of my thing. You know, that's what people see. Now, I will admit, my viewers love to see me draft, and I think it's because it's a little less monotonous. It kind of levels the playing field with the cards that we get. But I like to see the Standard decks too, so I bring those out. And I think when you're evaluating Standard, you have to find an archetype that works, you know, find those cards that are going to win you the game, and then build around that. And are these strategies viable in the current meta? I think, and like we said, meta applies to everything, but the Standard meta is always changing. So I think good resources like MTG Goldfish, Channel Fireball, that kind of give you updates on the meta and updates on the decks that are popular, are super important to being successful in Standard. Because I might think, wow, I want to do life gain. Like, that sounds like a cool mechanic, and there's lots of support for it. But if there's like life gain hate, like rampant in the format, then maybe that's not going to be an archetype that's viable. And as much as that stinks, you know, it's up to you. Do I want to play this archetype that I like, but is probably going to get, you know, pub stomped, or do I want to try to win? And then you kind of, it's an interesting mix of, it's almost like, and so I'm a musician, and, you know, a lot of times my kids talk about, well, why do we have to learn about theory and stuff? I said, well, you need, and Picasso said this, by the way, you need to know the rules like a master, so you can break them like an artist. And sometimes that's how I feel about
I
Standard.
Love that.
Like the people who are really good at Standard, you know, like the professionals, the LSVs, the Reed Dukes, the Autumns, you know, Emma Handy, they see what's going on in the format and they see the rules. Okay, well, this is viable. This is viable. And then they make those little tweaks that are like, well, really, you're going to do that? And then they, you know, win, you know, Worlds or something like that.
Right.
With these decks that you didn't expect. Who was it? Seth Manfield bringing Rogues to the Worlds earlier a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
you know, Rogues was kind of like a meme deck, and it was like, it's good, but it's not going to see top play. Well, he found a way to make it work, you know, knowing what was going to be played and then adjusting to that meta. So evaluating cards that are currently good, I think, is the important part, where other formats, you know, they might stay good. Remember that one week, well, I was going to say Embercleave, but Embercleave is always good right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, Wilt, I've seen Wilt destroys artifacts and enchantments. I've actually, that grew in popularity because you could cycle it. But as graveyard decks kind of keep coming back, you know, talking about Kroxa, stuff going into the graveyard, people have started playing Return to Nature because you can, is it Return to Nature? It's the one where you get those two abilities and you can also exile stuff from the graveyard. So just because it has that one extra mode right now, it's actually worth it, even though you lose the cycling.
Yeah, I was just going to say too, like I keep up with the Standard scene, just like a fringe kind of thing. I play it on Arena when I want that nice little, that hit of magic. But
sure.
When I saw some players tweeting out, oh, I'm running red green this week, and I was like, wow, why are they playing red green? I thought all these other decks were all the rage right now. And then I looked at the deck and I was like, that's a really cool deck, and like there are cards in there that I had never thought that, like, it was, you know, half adventurer engine, half Landfall Engine, right. Have just like regular red green mid range with Embercleave, and I was like, that deck's really sweet. So right. And, like and you again, said, it's just, always changing.
You're right, and I just want to point out two Magic players that I really really admire for many reasons: Emma Handy and Autumn, who pioneered that deck and kind of said, "Hey, this is gonna be the Omnath killer," and they got really really far with it. Omnath did end up winning the tournament worlds, but again. They looked for, this is what people are going to be playing. How do we counter it? You know, it's, right. It's like metagaming. It's just so cool. Like my mind doesn't work that way, which I just want to talk briefly about net decking and how that's a bad word sometimes. But honestly, why? Get over it. You know, like we have the unique opportunity to share information at, you know, lightning speed nowadays. So if someone puts up a cool deck, why not look at it? Why not? Everyone else is going to be, you know, the professional players are doing it. They're looking at decks, looking at each other's decks. And modifying. So I don't think that net decking, which is looking up a list online and then basically copying it and learning to play it, isn't a bad thing. I think if you want to have a little bit extra from there, go ahead, switch out a few cards. Maybe don't play the play set of Scavenging Ooze. Maybe put something else and see how that works. And that's how you start to go. So I think net decking is good for ranking up, for doing those things. But then, you know, feel free to kind of go and add things that you see fit from there, but don't be afraid to do it. MTG Goldfish, probably my favorite thing to go on. Yeah. Look at the top decks, and usually I don't pick the top one because again, it costs too many rare wild cards, it costs too much money. But you can find stuff that works well for you in there.
Yeah, and the analogy that I can draw with that, you know, from my video gaming background is when I was a fighting game player. You know, I played Super Smash Brothers at tournaments. Someone that I knew in my scene, he said this thing and it really resonated with me. He said, "Listen, I want to be the thing holding my character back. I do not want to be held back by my character."
Talking Ooh, about a good
he
one.
Picked right, like he picked a guys, really good
character.
Guys, we are
dropping philosophy today, man.
So he would play a really good character and a really hard character, and he did that because he felt that he can improve, but the character itself cannot improve. So it's the same idea with net decking.
True.
So if I'm going to go look up red green mid range or whatever they call it, get that deck list. Now I have a good deck. I can then grow as a player and play that deck better. So the deck isn't holding me back. Like if I was to, you know, brew my own mono green stompy list or something like that, the deck isn't holding me back. I know that the deck is good. It's going to be me that's holding back the deck. And that's a gap that I can close.
Sure. No, for real. That's great. And so that's one of the, you know, many things about Standard that are exciting, things that are going to be fixed. I definitely think playtesting needs to probably get a little bit more love on the Wizard's end. seeing how these environments are going to play out. If you ever want to hire me and Taito to come by and play some cards before they're released, Wizards, you know, just hit us up. We would be glad to help. But I think that's going to conclude our episode here. Now, there's so many formats to talk about. So let's keep the conversation going in the social medias, on Twitter when this drops, on YouTube. Comment. Tell us what your favorite formats are and why, and kind of how they've impacted your life, impacted your playing. And so to find us on those socials, Connor, why don't you tell us where they can find us on the social medias?
Yeah, so we're both on Twitter and Twitch for the most part. I am at Taito Parliament, TYTOPARLIAMENT on both of those platforms. I tweet often about Magic and US politics, and I will be tweeting more and more about looter-based games because that's what I'm going to talk about more on my Twitch channel, which is also Taito Parliament. So I have decided that I'm going to try to give streaming another shot, and I'm going to try to find my niche in the looter genre. So,
excellent.
I've been playing a lot of Genshin Impact, which has been my life for the past few weeks. Destiny 2 is and will always be my favorite game. And there's another game coming out in November called Godfall from Epic Games and Gearbox, which is a looter shooter, but if it was an action RPG with like swords and hammers and axes and stuff like that.
That's right. That sounds cool.
It's so cool. So I'm going to be trying to bring my stream back to life with these kind of games. I'm going to try to get up a consistent schedule. And honestly, Magic will probably be in there because what is Magic but a loot-based game where we get nice shiny pieces of cardboard, digital cardboard. So yeah. What about you, Jake? Where can they find you?
Well, first off, you let me know when that go. I'll be your first subscriber back to welcome you back. And for me, you can find me on Twitter at Jake Casual and everywhere else on the internet. Go look up casual_Jake_. I don't know why Twitter didn't have that name open, but here we are. So check that out. I do stream on Twitch pretty regularly. I was going to be mostly in Magic Arena, playing Standard, playing Historic, doing some drafts. And if you check out my YouTube, again, just type in Casual Jake. You'll see some deck techs, some VODs, some extra deck stuff. And when I say deck techs, I mean not only my EDH stuff, but some standard stuff, some historic stuff. We just have fun on that. And I think we should let them know about the MTG Educators Network social medias as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So if you want to find us, we are at MTG Ed Network on Twitter and on YouTube, where we are uploading. For now, they are technically video versions of the podcast. They don't have too many crazy graphics or anything just yet. We definitely want to, you know, get our feet underneath us first, and then we'll start to improve those as well. But you can just search up MTG Educators Network on YouTube. Look for the purple hat, and you'll see us there.
Perfect. Well, Connor, this has been so much fun talking about all these formats, man. I can't think of anyone else I'd rather talk with.
Oh, thank you so much. This has been great. It's a fantastic second episode, and I can tell that this podcast is going to, you know, we're really going to take off. So I really hope that we can continue to talk about this game that we love so much.
Of course. And just thank you to everyone who listened to episode one. If you haven't, go ahead and check that out. That's kind of where we introduce the MTG's Educators Network, what we're about, what we're here and doing. And I mean, you're kind of listening to it too. You know, this is what we do, is we give a platform to our members to talk about Magic, to talk about teaching, and we'll be expanding upon that as we go. And so I guess, yeah, finishing up here, I'm Casual Jake.
And I'm Connor, aka Taito.
And remember that teachers make magic.